I almost spend the majority of my time in here when it's closed and there's no one around. I usually get to the museum at 6:45 in the morning, and it's just the place and me. And yeah, we just spend time together. It's a very intense part of the day. It makes me very happy with this whole magical place, and it's just me, the two of us. It's great. Yeah, it's a privilege.
What do you do in here?
I think, I walk, I exercise, I meditate, I do yoga, I stand in front of artworks and look at them for a long time. Whatever the day gives me, that's what I do.
You exercise in here?
Yeah, but don't tell anybody.
Okay. It's such a good mental picture, though.
Oh, look, seriously, girl, there's a piece up here, Pulse, which, you know, the light bulbs that do the heartbeat thing?
Mm-hmm.
Do 30 minutes of yoga under that, and that'll blow your mind. Yeah, this place cooks me every day. It's fabulous.
What is so significant about the tattoos you wear?
Every tattoo that a person wears is part of their story. But this tattoo has nothing to do with me. It was a tattoo that was originally on a pig, and it was put onto me, and it is an artwork because Wim Delvoye declared it to be one, and he signed it, and it was sold. And it has made me into the frame of a piece of art. And for 11 years, I've gone where this piece of art goes, and I've been allowed to experience and listen and watch what it experiences. And now I'm here, and I talk about it.
Have you met anyone else in your life who is a human exhibit in a museum as their main profession?
No. No, I haven't. Wim Delvoye did not come up with this idea. This idea has been in film and literature for many, many years. It's just the first time that it's actually been done. And it's interesting in a world of having millions of versions of the same thing to just be one. It's really, sometimes it's very spaced out for me to sit on my box and realize it's just me. Even though I have nothing to do with this, I'm just here because of my tattoo. I'm the frame. And it's a very special place in my life and in my head to be in.
I'd love to talk about a few different aspects with you. Some of the practicalities, I imagine, the questions people always want to know about having a work of art on your body and having that sold. And I'd love to also talk about what it's like to sit and be watched and be silent for 5 hours a day, because that is something almost no one else will ever experience. What is that room, firstly? What is the space where you exhibit these tattoos on your body?
So I sit at the top layer of the void, and the void is the big hallway, the church-like hallway with what I consider to be a wailing wall, where people enter the museum and go down this. It's my church. I've stared into that place for 1,500 hours. Every person that has gone through this museum, when I'm there every day when the museum is open. I have a very little contact, visual contact with everybody that goes through there. And I have very little clothing on, and everybody's standing around me, judging me, speaking about me, often ridiculing me. I get all that. Look, I'm the first one to admit that sitting on a box for a living is completely idiotic. Trust me, if I saw myself sitting on that box when I entered a museum, I would think, who is this idiot? I get that. Sitting on boxes, either staring at my own shadow at a wall or staring down into that void. I just sit there and I wait. And sometimes I have music on, but the majority of the time I sit there in silence and I allow whatever needs to happen.
Most of us could never face that sort of time without any stimulation, input, distraction. What was the process like of becoming accustomed to spending that sort of time just with yourself?
It's the same process as anything, I believe. You need a certain amount of passion. You need a certain amount of discipline. You need conviction, and you need faith in the thing. And so many people say to me, I could not do this. And there's nothing special about what I do. I've just forced myself for months and months and months because I believed that the point will come where this is bearable. And it's every hour sucks on that box, believe me. My job is to sit at a bus stop for 5 hours a day waiting for the bus while I know that it's never going to come. And that's an interesting headspace to be in. But it's becoming more bearable, and I'm learning how to deal with it more. And it has taught me that in life, it really doesn't matter what you do. It matters how you feel about it and how you approach it. And doing nothing all day is the hardest, most challenging, most rewarding, most overwhelming thing I've ever done. And it's that. It's discipline. We live in a world where everything is about choice. And this one thing, there is no choice. I have to sit on that stupid box 5 hours a day or I lose my job. So taking the element of choice out and just forcing myself to do this, I'm starting to come out on the other side of a very long, dark, challenging tunnel. And there's a lot of light here. I'm still not there yet, but I'm on the way. And with an institution like Mona supporting me and giving me the opportunity to have this experience, I'm gonna rock it. I'm gonna sit this time like I've never sat before, darling.
How does your body respond to 5 hours of such stillness?
My body is in a state of pain all day long. Yeah, of course. I sit on your desk for 10 minutes and then we'll, you know, I say this all the time. It's no, I sit on a very thin towel. It's really tough. And it's at the end of the day, as weird as it is, I wake up every day and I'm full of anticipation. I look forward to it. I love my job. And at the end of the day, I'm broken. I'm broken physically. I'm broken mentally. I can barely speak. Let's say I run a marathon in my head every day. And the reason I can do it at Mona is because I have a team of people here that support me on a level of professionalism that I've never experienced before. The curators are my coaches. The communications department is my masseuses, my sports trainers. I'm never alone here. They take care of me. They take care of my headspace. They know the intensity of what I'm experiencing. And I've never felt alone here. And many other institutions that have been exhibited, they treat me like a piece of art. They show me the box and that's it. And here, every day that I sit on this box, I have a member of the front of house staff standing next to me, watching my back and protecting me. And these people do such a phenomenal job and they've all become friends of mine and I need to trust them. And I do. And I do this very personal thing, but I'm in a huge team of people that allows me, enables me and supports me in doing it. It's every day here is an unbelievable struggle and an unbelievable blessing.
Tim Steiner, Tattoo Tim on ABC Radio. His body is a work of art by Wim Delvoye. It's tattooed. It has even been sold to a bidder. What do you hear from people in the background when they're looking at you when you sit on the box? Do you listen?
I don't have much choice. Well, what I hear mostly is Bitfall, the waterfall next to me that drops every second. If people are standing really close behind me and they're facing me and they're speaking, then I can hear what they say. Oh, I really don't like saying but I hear the whole spectrum. I hear people that are in awe and really, I think, understand what I do. And there's people that ridicule me completely. They do, like I said, they do what I would do. And it used to really hurt me. I was very sensitive when I thought, you don't know who I am, I'm not provoking you, I'm just sitting here, and you're saying some dark stuff about me. And again, it's been 11 years. Let everybody be on their trip. I don't care anymore. As much as the praise doesn't make me think that what I do is amazing, the criticism doesn't make me think that I'm an idiot. But it's present. It's sometimes it gets quite out of hand. It gets out of control. People respond very intensely to this piece. And they're not letting their emotions out on the artist. They're letting them out on me because the artist is not here. The stuff that happens at the Tim position at Mona it can be next level sometimes. You know, I'll have people standing there discussing how disgusting it is to place a corpse in a museum. You know, I had a lady that walked through the museum in the year that I was here 3 times showing her friends the taxidermy man. And by the 4th time, she found out I was real. You should have been there for that conversation. Oh, wow, that woman broke. I broke too. It's amazing. Look, it's amazing.
You actually broke on the box?
Stop. No, I came back from a break. She came around and she asked the invigilator where the taxidermy man was. And he said, I was on a break. And she started laughing and said, no, seriously, you know, is he in storage? And then he said, oh, no, look, here's Tim. He's coming back from his break. And she turned around. And then she died many, many, many times.
Yeah. Yeah. Watching a corpse walk towards her. Yeah.
We had a really interesting conversation.
What were your negotiations like when you discussed the project with Wim Devoire back in those early days?
The negotiations were straightforward. I met this unbelievable human being. Wim Devoire is a madman in the most beautiful sense of the word. And it went very fast. He showed me a tattoo design that was on his pig. He said, let's put this on you. I'll sign it. We'll sell it and we'll see what happens. And I looked the man in the eye and he was a certified wild man. And I've always believed that life is about collecting stories. And this was going to be one hell of a story. And it's not just become a story. It's various chapters in the story of my life now. And it's become the centerpiece. It's amazing. It's this whole... So really, when people ask me, what are my talks about? It's about that. It's about me trying to verbally understand and share what's been going on for 11 years. Because it's pretty unique.
What was the sale like?
The sale, I was in a room with lawyers and representatives of relevant art individuals, and a contract was signed over a relatively large part of my body. And it was ridiculous.
What are the logistics of that? How does somebody bid on your skin?
It wasn't bidding. I mean, the bidding would be the second phase. What we did was the primary sale. There was an individual that wanted it. The price that there was for it, he bought it. The bidding will happen, what Wim Devoire hopes to be the second phase, that eventually Rick Reinking will put me up for auction. And in the secondary market, Wim has this vision of me walking up and down an aisle at Sotheby's or Christie's, and very important people in suits and expensive dresses bidding on me. That's his final and most important vision. But he's struggling at the moment because Rick's not selling. Rick is holding on to Tim. He likes this piece. Yeah, we're good. We're good. I like my owner. We're close. And I love calling him my owner. It upsets him so much. I introduce him to people. I say, this is Rick. He's my owner. And he goes bright red. It's a very dark piece if you think about it, but you got to approach it with humor. Otherwise, you'll lose yourself in the negativity.
Is he happy to have you alive?
I don't know what time you're bringing this out, but let's be honest. If you think about Rick and Rick Reinking, the owner, and Wim Devoire and myself sitting at a table together, having a couple of drinks and laughing, in essence, we all just want the other one to die. Yeah. So Rick sits there and thinks, well, when Tim's dead, well, you know, then I don't have to deal with him. Then I finally have the peace. Wim thinks the same thing. I think if Rick dies, then they'll have to do a resale. I think if Wim dies, then the value will go up. We're three guys that really like each other, but that really wouldn't mind if any one of us kicked, you know what I mean? Kicked the bucket. As silly as it's, so it's Wim has taught me that you need extremes and you need two sides. And I believe this piece is a celebration of that. This piece is more or less solely about death and dying. But until that point, it is an unbelievable celebration of life, and it's a contradiction in itself, and it's made my life a contradiction in itself. And I'm in a place, particularly Mona, which is a contradiction in itself. Everything makes complete sense here because it makes no sense at all. That's the genius of David Walsh. And to be part of that unbelievable intellectual machinery, for a kid that used to be a gas station attendant in Zurich, is incredible. Helen, it's incredible.
Tattoo Tim Steiner on ABC Radio. Do you think that is true of acknowledging and embracing the reality of death, that you do live more fully?
This piece has given me a really beautiful sense of stoicism and fatalism. I'm not a spiritual person. I don't believe in higher power. I'm very rational. I'm very logical. And because I know for myself that there is no God, I've realized that everything is God. Oh, is this weird to say? And our existence is perfection, every breath we take. This piece has not taught me about death or life. It's taught me about judgment, and it's taken all judgment from me. And it's made me realize that the perfection of existence, there is no evil. There's darkness. We need darkness and we need light, but there's no evil. And all of this is perfect. It's perfect. I've spent a lot of time thinking about this. Being locked down on this box every day has made me really, really free in spirit and in mind.
If there's anyone you could relate to in this world, would it need to be monks who've retreated somewhere in silent meditation for extended periods of time? Is that the closest?
No, because they're taking the intensity of their experience and they're taking it away from us. They're not sharing it with us. I think we're here to share. I think we're here to give. And I don't want to be outside of this world. I want to be of this world. I want to take part in this. The people that are closest to me are people, and I'm not a hippie, Helen, believe me, but are people that project love and peace and respect. And that's it. It's in this world of, as you mentioned before, in this world of ridiculous speed and unbelievable complexity, I've just realized, I haven't seeked, I've just seen that it's about simplicity. It's about minimizing. It's not about how many friends you have on Facebook. It's about the three friends that you have, that you give them everything that you are. I own nothing anymore. This experience has put me down to a backpack. I have no telephone. I have no social media. I have nothing. I have a backpack. And I no longer have worries. This whole less is more philosophy, all this, pardon my, you know, whatever language, all this bull about, it's all really, really simple.
Is this something Wim Devoe has done again?
No, he hasn't. I, you know, honestly, Helen, with the pigs, Wim said to me that tattooing pigs is pretty straightforward. You know, they do as they're told. I'm different. With all the amazing experiences we've had confrontations, we've had conflict. I'm like his little adopted son, and it was easy for him when he could just put the milk bottle in my mouth. And all of a sudden I started my art world puberty. And that was a difficult period for us. And I don't think he has the energy to deal with all that crap again. We're good now. I would say I'm an adult now, and he's my art dad. And we have a good relationship because I'm free. We no longer live in the same house, and I have to abide by his rules. He's happy with how it turned out. He's happy how I graduated from my school of sitting on boxes. And yeah, like that.
And before the art upbringing, what was your family upbringing like?
Oh, my parents were really good at trying to make me be a normal person. But I didn't allow that to happen. I guess all it is I realized relatively quickly that the only thing you have in life is the stories that you collect. And so I went out from when I was very young, and I consciously decided to collect anything and all of it. And I did. And there was no structure. There was no goal. It was just all in the moment. And some of it was fabulous, and a lot of it was not. Mm. And now for the first time, I have a structured existence, doing something unbelievably silly.
How incredible that this is where you found a structured position in your life. What sort of careers did your parents have while you were growing up?
My mother raised two really intense and, I think, good kids. And my father was a very, you know, the standard, very successful Swiss businessman. We had a very traditional life. I always looked to push buttons. And it's funny now that the most button pushing thing that I do every day of my life, and I get paid for it.
With Swiss precision.
With Swiss precision, darling. Well, you are so right. Ooh, I don't do the chocolate, but oh, I'm on time. 5 hours a day? You know, and I've been sick I got this beautiful summer flu you guys have down here. For an island with the best, you know, air in the world, you got a lot of diseases. So I was knocked out by the flu for about a week and a half. Now, sitting up on that thing while you can't breathe with snot running down your... It's... Wow. So it's the little challenges in life, but I'm getting better.
Do you have contractual obligations about the condition you need to keep your body in?
No, I do not, luckily. The contract I have is with myself. Vim is very aware that this piece is about decay. He wants to show that when we started in 2011, I was young and vibrant, and the colors of the tattoo were young and vibrant. And with every year that passes, the color fades, and I get weaker. And he wants to show that process. So Vim is, I had various back operations. Vim is happy with every new scar. Vim is happy with if I got burned or because it shows the process he wants with every photo we take. There's slight, tiny differences to the time we took a photo before. And that doesn't happen with other pictures that are in frames. Mm. So no, I can do whatever the hell I want.
Have you had other tattoos since the work by Vim Dauvoir?
Yes, I got tattooed here last time when I was here every week by Jordan Hooper, a fabulous friend of mine and tattooer, very talented young guy. And I thought if I suffer on the box 6 days a week, I might as well get tattooed every seventh. But that's why he's called Baby Jesus, because he's really fine. Once I'm settled in again this time, I'm going to go back to him and we're going to continue the process.
Is it a different relationship with your tattoos when they're yours?
Oh, look, again, I mean, tattooing's over. You know, it's every person that I meet now that has no ink, I say, please don't start because you're a unique individual. Look at us idiots. I started getting tattooed when it really was still the last bit of rebellious flavor. Now it's dead. The meaning is gone. It's commercialism. It's consumed itself by making itself mainstream and not staying in the underground. So when I get tattooed now, I just do it for fun. It's not serious anymore. I have nothing to say. There's no more statement. For me, it's nice to sit with friends and talk and laugh and have them work their talent on me. But tattooing culture, it killed itself. Finished. Don't get tattooed. Don't get pierced. Stay clean. Yeah, you're not going to impress anybody anymore.
For people who haven't had the chance to see it, what is the work Vim Dauvoir has done on your back, Tim?
It's a tattoo world insulting mishmash of nothingness. You see, the tattoo world is based on statements, on images having meanings. And he took a bunch of random images, kind of slapped them together and said, the meaning of this piece is that it has no meaning, no relevance. I'm just taking iconic tattoo imagery and using it for high art. It's swallows and bats and a Madonna and a skull and roses and koi fish. And it's completely nonsensical. And it needs to be because Vim is saying that he's taking tattooing as a medium. It doesn't play a role in this. It's not about tattooing. It's not about the tattoo. It's just the only way that we could sell a human being. So that was the medium that he picked.
Mm. Why sell a human being?
Why not sell a human being? We're living... This piece is not as provoking as people think. It's a clear statement. Let me say it like this. People often come to me and say, you're prostituting yourself. You're selling yourself. I'm doing the exact same thing that every underpaid individual that goes to work in the morning enslaves themselves for 8 hours and goes back at night, except that I really enjoy myself doing it. I represent what we're all experiencing. Everybody that signs a contract is selling themselves, except that my contract is longer than the other people's contracts. Mm-hmm.